All right. Welcome, everybody, to Chad Watch, episode five. I'm Chris Silva.
I'm Kyle Miller.
We got Jamie Lowell over here today. Really good friend of ours and a very, very seasoned and just a hardened activist for cannabis and somebody who we both really respect and admire, and also has a very good knowledge base for the group of Chads we would roll into, which actually is a pretty pretty appropriate day, because I saw that Steve Linder, the former leader of this group, is piecing out from politics after his stint with the MCMA. So
that's news to me. I did not know that.
Yeah, he released it on like a news podcast.
a real
news podcast. One where they're not smoking weed and shit. Maybe, I don't know. So we can definitely roll into that too. But why don't we start with Jamie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, and just about your background and experience with cannabis and kind of I guess why you're here today, you know, is like
Back to the good old days, Jamie.
Yeah,
I won't spend too much time going over, you know, a lot of it, but I'm 13, 14 years in of really dedicating a lot of time and effort and focus and to this movement and kind of towing the line between activism, advocacy, business. Helped to start the first locally recognized dispensary in the state in Ypsilanti with a few other people, 2009, and have been available to work with local governments, working in Lansing, the first industry association, Michigan Association of Compassion Centers, MAC, and just really responding to and with other people, whatever best to help move the needle forward, you know, for many years. And right now I am director of advocacy and social equity for the Botanical Company, a Lansing-based retailer that really supports me continuing to do a lot of that stuff. So I'm very grateful about that. And, you know, in this new world, I'm with Michigan ASA, with the Michigan Cannabis Freedom Coalition, with Great Lakes Expungement Network, with the Redemption Foundation, and just really trying to be involved in all these great forces that are getting people out of jail, getting people's records expunged, working against bad bills in the state legislature, working on behalf of good ones, getting into local governments and trying to stop bad policy there, and just continuing the battle. And I was one of the authors of the MRTMA, the legalization bill. And, you know, I have a little bit of a motivation to want to protect a lot of the work that I've been involved in. But really, my involvement's been based around what's best for most, and learning from all those who have come before us and trying to be a group. And I know there's a lot of dissension in this movement. It's a very diverse movement, but there are these times where we can all be on the same page at the same time. And I just try to interact at those points and move something forward and continue to do that to today. And I appreciate this show for creating a platform to kind of look at some of that, some angles of that very specifically. So,
well, we appreciate you and all the things that you've done over the years. You've really helped move this industry forward in the state and in the nation, you know, nationwide. So that's great.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you.
Right on.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just want to echo that too, man. Thanks for all your hard work and it's one of the only industries I can really think of where many of the people that are participating in it now, not many actually, some of the people, a few really good people like you actually, who have been in the industry now helped actually like create it, like saw that like, hey, this shit's fucked up. I should be able to do what I want to do and do this thing that's not hurting anybody, and then going out and actually do it, you know. So yeah, man, that's just super awesome to see it actually like play out for real. So thank you. And then I guess a little contrarian to what you were saying about kind of a more like unified community is what we're seeing now is now that now that many people see this front on the war on drugs done, right? Like to Joe Consumer, they just think, oh, hey, you know, cannabis is legal now. Pretty soon I can just go buy this whatever. Everyone doing it's about the same, good or bad. But it's not like that, right? And so there's a group of large cannabis manufacturers and retailers, industry-wide, actually, they're all of the rings. And they have a trade association, the Michigan Cannabis Manufacturers Association, and they're responsible for a lot of negative lobbying, and there's an assault on caregivers and stuff. So if you could give us a really like brief, like pretend I've never heard of it. I'm just a guy who smokes weed. It's like a brief overview of who these folks are, and just a little bit about where they've they've assembled their team, right? Like who they were maybe a little bit in their previous lives,
right?
Like that.
Michigan the cost to get into the club.
I heard at one point there was some informal meeting, and Chelani, of course, from High Life, says, everybody pony up a quarter mil, and they get started that way. Maybe that did happen. Those types of people, can produce that. So maybe that had, I don't know if that was a lore or if that happened, but I don't know otherwise much about this organization, except for a few of the members and the fact that they are trying to unnecessarily and ignorantly peel back existing rights, in an effort to what they believe will benefit themselves. But they are the most recent incarnation of big money interests, trying to advantage themselves using their resources and their influence in the legislature. And Steve Linder, the man who is about to retire, who's heading up the organization currently or has been, was a part of the last one that I think it was called the Michigan Responsibility Council. And this all starts in 2009, right after the passage of the act, where we had this, it was called the Kuiper Bill. And it was Senator Kuiper who introduced a bill that would eliminate the caregiver system in lieu of like 10 large grows, which should sound kind of familiar because that's a model that's been attempted many times. And we had to start fighting it then and on that level. It's very similar stuff, 12, 13, 14 years later. They're continuing to, apply the same kind of MO in hopes that they will, take over unnaturally controlled war market share. So that's not uncommon in a lot of industries, but with this new industry, we like to believe that if enough people are interested, we can shape this in a way that doesn't have to succumb to typical forces and more seasoned type industries where there's a lot of issues. This is a new thing. We can help lift a lot of people up that haven't had that ability. It's a unique opportunity, and we can make this something that's a lot more participatory for more people. And of course, that's not in the philosophy of the big money interests that want to control everything. And those forces are strong. The group we just mentioned is very formidable. I mean, I'll probably just mainly confirm stuff that probably most of us know here, but the reality is they have lobbyists and PR firms and people that are heavily connected that spend millions of dollars a year to develop relationships with lawmakers. They understand these, what they, some people refer to as black ops, these ways and means of under the radar, creating a, affecting change and things I couldn't even describe that I don't know about. I know that on the day what we consider a bad bill, House Bill 5512, for example, which maybe we'll talk about later, we expected there to be a lot more people in opposition. But on that day, many people flipped. And we try to find out, what came in and made this change last minute. That this is just how the system works, kind of. And, and it is a huge challenge. And somewhere in there, the lawmakers that are not being transactional, are not just purely going along because they have a relationship with somebody or something like that. Those who really care about an issue and want to think it through before making a decision and want to hear all stakeholders' side of it. I mean, there has to be enough of those, and those votes have to be enough in order to affect change in this climate. That is the best I can tell, and that's not always easy, but we have done it. And even though there's all this disagreement in the community, we've come together. When 5301 was really getting a lot of momentum last fall, I thought it was pretty beautiful how many people, political spectrum, the diverse community on this issue agreed, and a lot of people did something, and so far we've been able to stave it off. Now we can talk about that effort is now being, by those groups, by MCMA and others, being moved into the Senate, which is a concern, which we should probably talk about here a little bit too. That's where we are. We have a formidable challenge ahead of us.
Let's talk about that Senate bill that you just mentioned. Where is that right now? And more specifically, which one was that? Is that the one that reduces the plant count?
Yeah, well, it's not a Senate bill. I brought up a House bill, 5301, which is a part of a package of bills. But 5301 is the specific one that changes the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act, and that would peel back caregiver rights. That hasn't been able to advance in the House, in part because what I just explained about how people came together and, mm-hmm. and really got information to those people who are not particularly transactional.
Do those bills require 3/4 of the legislature because they were a referendum that we passed as voters? It's not a traditional 51% to 49%.
Well, yes, and that's the reason why those haven't passed already.
Sure.
Because that's a challenge. Now, the 55-12, I mean, we'll talk about that, too, in a little bit. That likely will. That has a slightly different set of circumstances around it. But, yes, because we're limited with who is going to really listen to us and take us into consideration before making a decision, it's also true that we, in the House, for example, we only need like 27, 28 no votes to stop one of those attempts at changing, you know, the people's law, an act that was voted on from being changed. So that's why we've been able to be successful ultimately against these very, very formidable and competent and well-funded sources or opposition.
Excellent.
And man, so, you know, yes, Linder is retiring, but he's become kind of a joke. He's not really that effective. You know, he's got a career of being effective in many regards and having close relationships and all that kind of stuff and doing the things that somebody want to hire him for. He then had some experience, of course, with the Michigan Responsibility Council and probably segued that into a pretty lucrative situation with the MCMA. I'm sure without even passing anything, he's made tons of money off of this. And but man, the people behind him, Shelley Edgerton, she's a very, very competent person, you know, very well connected, former head of the LARA, the state's departments, you know, that oversaw the implementation of this program. Mark Fisk from Byram Fisk, a big, huge PR firm, very connected with Democrats. They're going to go to the Senate and try to do anti-caregiver type stuff. There's no bill that's been introduced yet, but the idea is to go there, where there's more support, all right, and, you know, less numbers to work with, and, better chances of getting something going and getting something through there and then bringing that momentum back into the House. So, you know, incidentally, I should mention while I'm thinking about it, there is a lobby day planned for May 19th, an opportunity for a lot of people who would really like to help out and, you know, use a little bit of time and energy where it might not normally be possible. A lot of people really want to help out in this cause and do something and really, every time somebody does something, it is extremely helpful. I mean, it's taken thousands of us over decades to move the needle, and that has to continue to happen to be successful. So I hear people say, I can only do this or I can only do that. All that stuff is very helpful.
You know? Absolutely. It all comes together and helps get that message out there. What was the date on that again?
May 19th. There'll be some more word put out about that and, you know, around the community, and people can get prepared for it and sign up. It's kind of short notice, but I mean, this is also that bad bills are getting fast tracked. And
yeah. And they, you know, these bad bills get introduced at 10 PM and, you know, go to committee the following morning and get driven down our throats. So it's important for the community to be able to assemble quickly like that.
I agree.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll try to get like a we'll try to promote that too whenever it comes up, man, and try to get people there. That's definitely me and Kyle and I both, from, you know, our experience working in politics, can all attest to, like, an in-person or a phone call to a legislator. That is, like, that's huge. Like, nobody does that shit. You know what I mean? Like, literally the only people that are showing up to meet with these people are, like, other people that are paid to do it, you know, like a lobbyist. So when somebody who actually lives where they live, shows up and talks to them and tells them, hey, you know, these people don't speak for me, and I'm a caregiver, or I'm a patient, or whatever, wherever you are in the chain, it actually does mean a lot, even if it's just a phone call. So
It absolutely does. You know, having worked in a legislative office, I can tell you that those things are taken into consideration for sure, at least by, you know, the honorable members of our legislature.
I was just going to reiterate that. That's kind of what I was saying. You know, there's a few of those, and if we can get reasonable information to those people, we stand a chance of them making a good decision. And that's come through for us. I mean, there were 16 people in opposition to 5512 when it passed, and many of those people kind of put their necks out on the line because there was a lot of pressure to go the other way. That's got its own set of circumstances. It's kind of a little bit different than the big money interest directly, but you know, those are example of people that really thought it through and made a decision and just didn't, you know, just take the easy way out and just go along with everybody else because they were convinced it was a great idea. And I think we've done better with making the argument that we shouldn't be taking away existing rights from people when they're not causing a problem, because obviously these big money interests are suggest a few things. There's this health issue that all the, you know, and the suggestion that all the caregiver cannabis be formally tested through the labs and meet all the same standards and everything like that, that the commercial, which is of course stupid and unnecessary.
There would never be enough time for the amount of labs we have to test realistically.
Yeah, it'd be like impossible. Yeah. It's like an impossible mandate. Like it's a, why do you think these
they
guys,
know that.
Right. And then the other, I'm sorry if you're going to ask a question,
go ahead.
And then, of course, there's other reasons why testing doesn't make any sense. There's been any problems with it in the 13 years that it's gone on. So to say that it needs it now, and including Shelley Edgerton, while she was the head of the department under emergency rule 19 for a while, caregivers were taking their cannabis, bringing it directly to retail stores, and it was being sold directly to patients. And there's no issues even with that totally open system. And then the reality is, on top of that, that many people chose to get their cannabis tested, and consumers would seek out those places where that information was available quite often. So without it being mandated, you know, it was kind of working reasonably well. And again, ultimately, zero issues, zero concerns, zero like health issues that arose from those practices. So that's just it's creating an issue out of thin air and trying to use it as the basis to affect change, you know, on their behalf. Also, it's a small garden. Typically the patients if they're being, you know, scrutinizing when choosing their caregiver, can have access to the practices and the methods that the caregiver's using and to inspect the garden if it's not at their own home, and to feel comfortable without having to do additional testing. But of course that is available anyway for those who want it. So there's really no reason to, you know, to do that part of it. The other thing is they claim that there are these abuses and somebody gets their caregiver license and they set up this illegal, you know, business where they produce cannabis using all these plants that they don't need. And then they just sell it to anybody regardless of whether or not they're the connected patient and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that they exaggerate how much that happens. There's no question about that when you listen to those conversations. They make it sound like in every neighborhood you can just walk down the street and smell cannabis and it's horrible. And obviously all this crime's taking place, or, you know, the image is clearly different than, you know, what one of these scenarios actually are. But whether or not that does happen or is happening, that's already outside of the parameters that's allowed. So you don't really need to do much else about that. But when you start peeling back existing rights, you then start hurting those who have been properly participating in the program, meaning, you know, helping out their patients. And then, of course, that can extend to helping out people that aren't directly connected to under certain circumstances with affirmative defense. But just sticking to, like, you know, the Section 4 part of it, you know, it hurts people that are utilizing what they need to take care of their five patients or however many that they have.
Yeah, no, so, and this is Chris from Chad Watch talking, not like Chris, a marijuana employee, you know, talking, but honestly, man, like I, even if it was rampant, I don't give a shit. Like that's, that doesn't matter at all to me. Like, I don't think we should be, like you said, there's already a system set up to, and when these guys try to crack down on stuff, they know, like you imply that people are going to get hurt. But the reality is those things have nothing to do with their businesses, man. Like in fact, sometimes I honestly think the street helps push shit into the stores. You know, like I almost think it's a, if you're anyway, so that's here nor there, but like the ideological thing is really what gets a lot of people about it, man, is that these guys even give a shit in the first place. Like some of these guys are running like the biggest marijuana grows, like basically in the world outside of Canada and California and a few places. And they're probably absolutely crushing it, but we're going to find out in a later episode about the REITs and capital, how the capital's gotten into the industry, that's probably not the case. A lot of them are probably over leveraged and just really underwater and stuff. But it's just crazy that they even give a shit enough to try to like if some guy's banging out 72 and selling to like all of his friends, and who gives a shit, man? Like that has nothing to do with anybody's legal business. And those people aren't coming to the stores anyways. So it's just I don't know. It's just I get it that's not like probably you probably shouldn't go say that to your state rep or state senator or some shit.
Right.
Like that's, it's just insane that like it's selling weed, man. I can't believe like we're talking about making it harder to sell weed.
It's an exposure of their ignorance. We always say like they've made bad decisions because they don't have historical perspective or understanding of the culture or even the product, you know, the nature of the product that they're coming in to, you know, sell and or produce and be a part of in this industry. And so therefore they don't have the best information, so they make bad decisions. And to think that they're going to like entice people into their stores by hurting the caregiver system unnecessarily is kind of stupid. And you're right, the pie is big enough for anything you can describe. And if they worked more on, and I would like to see this too, work more on easing up restrictions and prohibitions in the current system, and to make their own operations with their great business people and all these resources and all that kind of stuff, you know, just more efficient and functional, they could then compete against whatever without having to spend any time trying to hurt other people unnecessarily. And I mean, I don't like to believe that they just go, hey, we're just going to hurt these people. I mean, I think they really think they get advantaged from it somehow and that kind of stuff, but maybe they are that evil.
I think the optics of what they're talking about, if you're just Joe consumer, not even a marijuana person, like if you don't smoke weed, everything they're saying sounds good to just a normal person. You're like, oh yeah, this shit should be safe. And you know, people shouldn't be selling it illegally and people shouldn't be blasting BHO in their garages. You know, like I get it. But so like they think that they're like, hey, if we can kind of come in and shit all over the culture and shit a little bit and kind of be like, oh, we're not like these. And I think this is the essence of obviously my anger and like the Chad Watch angle on this, is that these guys are coming in here making money on all of us. Right. And then they're, many of us don't even know the shit that they're doing legislatively, because, and that's what bothers me too, is they're obviously smart enough to know that we don't like this shit, right? Like they're like, oh, this isn't the best. So like, they're not like, when you walk into Flourish, they're not like, oh, hey, let us tell you about all the ways we're trying to put caregivers in jail and shit. You know, like that's, you know, like that's stupid, right? You would never do that. Like, so they know, they're smart enough to know not to do that. They know that it's going against the culture. And I think that they're doing this as like it's political, man. It's the optics, right? Is like they say, hey, we're going to be the guys that are out here being like, oh, we're for best practices and GMP and blah, 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 and all this bullshit. And when they go talk to cities and investors and other people, they're like, oh, these are the good ones. Like these are the guys that we want to come in and blast out these dirty wannas or whatever. And, you know, they're the good actors, right? They're speaking business talk. And I think that's what the deal is. I'm not even sure if many of these people even like believe this shit. You know, I just think that the lenders and the Fisks and the people of the world that they're professional.
Oh, they're whores.
Yeah, yeah. They've just told them, like, they're like, hey, this is what, this is what the guy who lives in Novi wants to hear right now, who just allowed me, you know what I mean? Like,
hiring professionals that do that. And you're the one giving me the money. That's the side I'm going to take, you know?
Yeah. So it's just, I think that's what it is.
Reminds me of Rob Campia.
Well, that's what MPP turned into. They weren't always like that. And they kind of turned into that. And I don't know what current status is, but obviously, you know, they fortunately, probably for the best. I mean, and Rob Campia deserves credit up to a point. Doesn't absolve a lot of this shit we could talk about him, but did a lot of good stuff for long enough that it was very contributory to the overall picture right now.
I agree.
But good that the organization isn't with them anymore. And I don't know what current status is, but I'd like to believe they aren't just totally selling out language anymore. They were pretty open about it. And that's not something I can support because that could go so many different ways. And
absolutely. And they were very clear about it, that they were doing that.
Jamie, who do you think is the we're going to segue into, we wanted to get on the show, just your, a little bit of your reaction to the March Chadness, even though it's fucking May. You only do two of these a month. Chill out, you know? And so maybe if you could highlight maybe like the, in your opinion, the worst MCMA member, and then just little subtle jabs you want to get in at some of the March Chadness people.
Yeah. First of all, that was really cool. I paid attention and we had you on Jazz Cabbage.
Thank you.
You know, to talk about that a little bit and try to highlight it. It's kind of like having a little fun with some serious stuff, really. There are the MCMA members on there. There are a few outside of that that, demonstrated their willingness to support peeling back rights or have demonstrated being just really bad players in the industry. So there's a few different ways of looking at it and stuff, but I kind of believe in, not that I could just prove anything. Again, there's a lot of like a secrecy behind the MCMA curtain a little bit. It just seems like some of the really big money, the Chalanis with High Life and stuff like that are a big driving force. And I've heard different things. I don't know what's true or not, that like Michigan, according to Wall Street, has what's called the caregiver problem. And some of these big companies are ready to sell out, you know, for a lot. Some of these huge organizations, you know, because that's where the forces go eventually, industrially. But with this ignorantly perceived, you know, competition of caregivers, that makes that difficult. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. I've heard people, you know, argue that either way. But the push has been consistent, long-term, and well-funded. So there's a seriousness about really wanting to do this. So that's very real. And to the driving force consistently I hear is that would be like the High Life side of stuff. Obviously, you know, SkyMint or Green Peak or whatever.
Yeah, their deal went through today with 315, so they officially own all the 315s now.
That's official as of today.
That's SkyMint. That's Green Peak. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Okay. And there's other ones cannibalizing that's gone on too a little bit recently, and I think with Liv, I think Common Citizen has.
It sounds like all the Common Citizen retails will be Liv now. Is my understanding.
Okay. There you go. This is played out elsewhere and it kind of happens, you know, on some level. So this part of it isn't, you know, I guess it's a concern because you can see how things unfold and where they're heading and that kind of stuff, but not directly the issue, you know, that kind of just, I would say, you know, now 315 sucks, you know. Now Liv sucks, you know. So, however, you know, if you're in that close of a, working scenario or ownership, then you know, and you're trying to peel back these rights, we don't like you. I know that, you know, there was this informal boycott. It still goes on, but it was a lot more like meaningful and kind of, I think, effective early on. And Berg and Roach have been primary drivers behind it for Medical Mondays, and you know, and I. And I still kind of like it and support it and stuff like that, but it's kind of like become convoluted in that not everybody agrees with all the parameters used to determine who goes on there and why, and then how serious it is each time they come up in some scenario or, you know, or something like that. And it's become, you know, a little bit maybe watered down and to some people in that respect, you know, and some people take it still very seriously and they come on like, I can't believe that you were even near something that had that name on it, or, you know, or, you know, or something like that. So, I guess people need to figure that out where they are, you know, for themselves and how they want to go about that. But really there's a core of people and a core group, you know, not just the MCMA, but a few other big money interests surrounding them too, that are really just trying to take over. And that, you know, no matter what other little product or event or something like that might be going on, that remains a very significant threat and a constant. Just want to like hope to get people to focus on that a lot more than inner squabblings over, you know, associations that aren't really in that realm of significance.
Absolutely, man. That's one of the things too, like, that really pissed me off about this SkyMint deal is, so I'm from Grand Rapids and 315 got like three or four stores in Grand Rapids. I forget now how many they've only opened. I don't believe they've opened all the ones that they lined up.
They have at least two running right now. I know that.
They have two running right now. And like whenever they were getting all these licenses, it was Green Sky Healing Tree or some weird shit. So it was different back. There's a holding company. When they were picking all these up, like, you know, I was working with the guild and there was a bunch of locals trying to get them. And this is basically what we described to the city council is we were like, look, these motherfuckers are not going to run all these stores. They're just getting them to get them so they can sell them to someone bigger. Like the guy who's going to get the license is like 97 years old, man. He's not down here trapping them out. Like only one local got one in Grand Rapids, and this basically investment fund to pay these guys out when another larger Chad came and ate them up, like they're going to get paid out millions. And now these are going to get, they're either going to be the worst 315s in the world because they're run by SkyMint, or they're going to be a SkyMint, you know? And so now we have this scenario where this huge company that has so much of the market already and is able to use its money and political forces to fuck over the caregivers and the small guy and strangle them out. Now they have a stranglehold in the city that was trying to have an equity ordinance and trying, you know, there's only one local who even has one of these there, you know? So that's the problem with the, in my opinion, with the MCMA people is like, they're the ones that are able to play out these market changing events that really fuck over a lot of people that are trying to, you know, because those could have been opportunities for local operators. Local operators were trying to get them, and they didn't. You know?
The city could have made that part of their weighted assessment of who got those slots. And if they chose not to, then they probably tried to stave off a lawsuit. But it turns out, because there was Loom challenged that in Pinckney, the village of Pinckney, and the federal court judge said no, they can make that part of their criteria if they want to. So that there could have been trying to avoid that. But yeah, there should have been more of that if that's what people want, you know, and that group that came to them as you were a part of and said, we, you know, we're from here. We want to be able to have an opportunity here. So they allow, you know, some licensing, but then, you know, by the process, it ends up going to the big money interest anyway. And that's, you know, that sucks. That's all. It's too common of a story. Loom, for example, that I just brought up, not with the MCMA. In fact, they put out like some kind of a little campaign, a little PR campaign, making it clear they were not members of the MCMA. And I think they even said, we support caregivers and stuff like that. That's cool. That doesn't absolve them though of their activity,
right?
You know, which is also trying to advantage themselves and trying to hurt the little guy in order to do it. Mount Pleasant's a story there.
Mount Pleasant pisses me off. Yeah, me too, man. And so actually, I'm reaching out to Brandon McQueen, mm-hmm. to have him on the show and talk about that. I've always really, really liked and admired Brandon. And if anyone
I used to go to his shop when I was in college at CMU.
Yeah, dude. Anybody who was trapping weed a little bit too knows about the McQueen case. You know, that was like life changing. So like he's done a lot for this community and for his actual community where he lives, you know, and like and then for him not to get one of these licenses is fucking disgusting, you know.
Just, so that first industry association I brought up earlier, MAC, Michigan Association of Compassion Centers, supported him with lawyers and stuff like, or him and his former partner, the apothecary. I forgot what it's called, Compassionate Apothecary.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. First one in Mount Pleasant, one in Lansing too.
Yep.
And yeah, that was a weird decision, and it was done civilly. I mean, you guys probably talked about this with him. The prosecutor there sued to see, just to ask the question civilly, what is this considered? What is this scenario considered? Can we allow this or not? You know, and essentially the Supreme Court said, well, you know, if a caregiver is selling to outside of their five patients, that could be considered illegal activity. And if there's legal activity inside the building, that could be considered a nuisance. So you can shut them down. That turned into huge raids and criminal charges and all types of stuff, you know, that was well beyond kind of what that ruling, you know, could have resulted in. And that was a big deal. It was the first thing that people started saying, yeah, dispensaries are illegal. That's not what it said, but that's how it got accepted. You know, so that was a big part of this history.
Yeah, for sure. We're excited to dig into it. I think, especially when I'm out there hitting stores and stuff, like some of the people who are new to our industry, they don't necessarily, you know, they didn't work in the stores when it was like that. They don't know about that. But I think it's a really important part of this industry's history and culture. And I think that's why when this kind of shit goes down with the MCMA companies, it makes people like us so mad, because like a small number of people really literally put everything on the line, like went to jail for this shit and did all this stuff to push the ball forward, and then to get like hosed out on the on the ordinance like that is just it's insane, man. You know, it's just it really boggles my mind. So
it's unfortunately way too common. You know, it's hard to get enough people upset about it to do something, you know, and then even then it's difficult because those forces regroup and come back in and advantage themselves another way. You know, it's just ongoing. Yeah. You know.
For sure. Well, I think, why don't we have, if you could give us maybe, we're going to wind her down in a minute, but give us like, what should we be looking out for coming up legislatively? Like what kinds of things should the consumer be looking out for to try to do our part to turn the tide on these companies? And then also something I want to start doing on the show in general is maybe towards at the end of the show or just sometime during the show, maybe let's try to highlight like a couple good industry people that, you know, that aren't doing behavior like this, that we can all get behind and just people we've had good experiences with. So why don't you just give us an update on what we should be looking out for and leave us on some nice positive notes on people that we can support to that are working against this.
Okay. So, I mean, we kind of brought this up before, but the most recent activity is the MCMA acquiring, you know, creating a position or bringing in Mark Fisk formally, from a very big PR group. It's Byron Fisk, and Diane Byron is actually part of the PR that helped out the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act campaign. And so when they go in, they're like, hey, you know, this is you know, we're pioneers in this also, you know, they try to use that kind of credibility, you know. Yeah. And so some type of anti-caregiver legislation is going to be probably coming out, you know, out of the Senate. We did a good job of staving off 5301 in the House. If people can remind their Michigan House representatives that we need them to maintain that position, not worry about what they did with 5512. That's, you know, that's done with now. I mean, it feels like you want to go, wait, why'd you do that? But reality is that's done. Or you could say, I wish you wouldn't have, but, you know, I wouldn't give them any grief over it. And say, look, maintain your position, because they're coming at it from another angle. It's the same thing, even if you think they're trying to soften it or come, you know. And then, of course, in the Senate itself, we have the fast track 5512, where people could ask their senator to vote no on that. That's a very difficult kind of one to explain. It lends itself to smoke and mirrors. It also, like you were, even this other issue with peeling back caregiver rights, you brought it up before, Chris, it's there's there's lack of perspective in the legislature. So it's easy to come in and sound as if there's good intention and this would be a positive thing and that kind of stuff. When in reality, it's not really like that. And one of the things we complain about all the time is that these discussions about changing the people's law, especially the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act, which passed by 63% and by majority in every single county. I don't think anything else has probably done that, maybe, but not in modern history. And they just change it, you know, but, and they don't want to like bring in everybody who has meaningful input to really make that decision. Just try to appeal to people like, you know, vote no on 5512. We can discuss some particulars on it, but it lends itself to them making it sound like this is a good thing. Cause hey, here's a way we can get medical marijuana patients into these volunteer courts, you know, and it's just otherwise unnecessary. It will ruin the immunity that medical marijuana patients have. It'll create judicial overreach. Judges will be making medical decisions. They'll be creating obstructions for those participants. It's discriminatory on its face. And, you know, just at least say, please vote no. You don't have to say a lot more, get too deeply into it. Maybe if they want to have a discussion, you know, set that up and get to one of the advocacy groups, me, Brandy Zink, Rick Thompson, and many other people who, you know, who would be helpful in a meeting and try to get the information to those people who are going to be serious about, you know, thinking it through and then making a decision based on all the information and not just transactionally agreeing to something, which is really common, unfortunately, in our legislature. And we might have a chance of staving off peeling back the rights this session. You know, that's something that we've affirmed in the House and we can get on top of in the Senate now. And we're against these formidable forces and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I have some hope on that. I think that we have to, like, realize whether there's disagreements otherwise, that this is something that everybody generally agrees with. And just get together and focus on that and kind of not worry about that other stuff, you know, in that process, in that moment.
Do you know when the legislature breaks for summer?
Exactly, no.
Okay, well, the reason I bring that up is that it's likely coming soon, probably sometime in early June, I would think. And so if there is going to be any kind of unified push on their end, it's likely really close unless they're going to wait until September.
Well, the bill's been deemed fast-tracked, so I think you're probably more likely right than not, unless, I mean, we're understanding that the House was the better chance to stop it, and it's, you know, different climate in the Senate, but a lot of us have not stopped trying. We also need to get to the governor. I didn't really get into that too deeply, but it would be helpful if the governor could be convinced that this wasn't a good idea. It's been very difficult to get in touch with her or anybody around her on these issues. They've just, after the first couple of months kind of, and during the campaign and up to the first couple of months, had a little interest. And I haven't seen much action otherwise or much attention to this issue otherwise ever since. But if people could get to her or be inclined to want to write her and ask her to not support this, that possibly, you know, could be helpful also. I know I went off on a sidetrack there and I forgot your original question, Kyle. I'm sorry, man.
No, I was just asking about the when they were going on break.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
But fast tracked. And that's why, you know, May 9th, that's why we're trying to like do all this stuff right now. Kind of.
Sure. Yep.
Yep.
Speed it up. Yep.
Call to action right now.
And man, if we could at least slow it down, yeah, get to summer break, you know, that would be pretty good. Could make that a goal. That's possible. Can at least create enough question over this. But listen, man, when the judges say, hey, we want this, some of the lawmakers, even well-intended, just go, okay, you know, the judges, they have this credibility. And if they say they want it, it must all be good. And they just go along with it. That's a tough one too. Probably lost some votes just to that. So I've told some people, you know, some of the lawmakers that this, you know, the judges may not be, you know, like deviously strategizing, you know, for unnatural control. They might just really, you know, have good intentions and believe they have to have this type of control in their courts. This is how they're used to looking at stuff. But it doesn't mean that they're necessarily right. When we kind of break this down, this is discriminatory. Somebody's been through a state recognized process to get their card. That demonstrates they have a bona fide doctor-patient relationship. They approached a state licensed physician with all their information seeking help and created this relationship. Then the doctor determined that there was a qualifying condition that might be helped by cannabis and wrote a recommendation letter. That letter, along with an application, sent to the state. The state reviews it, and if approved, puts that person in the registry and sends out the card. So unless you think there was some issue with that process, the card says I've got a bona fide doctor-patient relationship and I have a qualifying condition. And currently they have immunity. And Michael Kamorn, who was on the show, I think last time around, and talked about, you know, the lab scandals and stuff like that and his great role in exposing a lot of stuff over the years, talks about the immunity. It's been largely disrespected, but I mean, it was upheld in the Tui case in which he was the attorney that, you know, if somebody's on probation or bond or something, they continue to use their medicine because they are medical marijuana patients that satisfied the state recognized process to be that. So they continue to use their medicine. And so instead of changing the law and, really making a bigger deal about it, they simply just need to agree that the existing law is okay. The affirmation of immunity is real and was wanted by the people who overwhelmingly voted this law in. And if somebody wants to take advantage of volunteer court or specialty court, instead of facing several years in prison and many serious charges and convictions, that they should be able to without being discriminated against just because they're a medical marijuana user. And once they're in that volunteer court, drug court included, they shouldn't be interfered with the use of their medicine. And if that could just be accepted, that would solve all the problems in the law change. You know, of course, you can imagine how difficult it would be for the judges to change their perspective like that. But that would really solve the problem. Some lawmakers get it, and they're making this decision. So it's important, you know, to get that across to them. Now, what the judges want to do, if a medical marijuana patient wants to participate in this court, they want that person, if they accept them, and they want control over even being able to accept somebody who would claim to want to be able to use their medical marijuana. So volunteer, you can go take the several years in prison if you want, you know? So then they want to have a special hearing and they want to make that person bring their recommending doctor to testify.
Jesus
that was
Christ.
That was a tactic that they used kind of against us for years in the regular courts until that mellowed out. That's obstructionist. It's very difficult to do. Most doctors don't want to do it. Sometimes they want to get paid pretty heavily as professional witnesses to go do stuff like that. It's just not practical. And then after listening to the doctor, then the judge makes the decision if it was a proper bona fide doctor-patient relationship and if the condition is, you know, warrants continued use or not. So the whole thing is just really, it creates judicial overreach, unnatural power for the judges. I tell some of the lawmakers that they have a responsibility to keep a balance of those powers. And then of course, really inappropriately, the judge would then make a medical decision about the person in their court. You know, and they're not obviously the person's doctor, let alone even a doctor or, you know, medical professional. So that's why we oppose it. We try to get that point across to people. It's very difficult because it gets pitched as if it's a good thing, you know, and a lot of our friends with good intentions have supported it because of that. So politics is rough. And, there's a lot of complex layers to wade through sometimes, and it's hard to do.
Yeah. Yikes, man. That's fucking terrible. You know what I mean? So like, thanks for doing this and for laying that out for us. Cause I think even just like on its, everything you said, man, very, 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 very good, very succinct, very well explained to the lay person, I think too. Everybody please get involved, do what you can. Email, show up, lobby day. We'll definitely drop the links for that on the social media and everything.
May 19th.
It's right before there's that weekend. There's like a hemp conference in town where it's going to get into medical cannabis as well as hemp industry stuff and have a lot of speakers. I'm not participating directly in it. I'll be there for the lobby day, but that is going on directly after. So some people may time it if they're interested in that. You know, come in, do lobby day and hang out for a couple of days and do that conference that's going to be in Lansing. If you are so inclined, sounds like it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, Lansing. Plug for Lansing. Well, cool, man. Thanks you so much for coming on the show and talking about these Chads. I definitely encourage everybody to do all the things that we just beat you over the head with. You know, do your part. Call these folks. Drop them an email. Show up in person. All or any of those things really help. And it's really important to, not just in cannabis, you should be doing this, I think, as a good consumer for a lot of most purchases, within reason, I guess. Try to encourage your bud tenders and people that you interact with when you go to the stores to maybe carry like an alternative to some of these companies. Like, you know, instead of buying like the Wana gummies, maybe buy like some of like the Noble Roads or Wilds or, you know, like the All Goods or the Oops of the world, even, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people that are out there that are many people that we know and fuck with and do business with and stuff like that have devoted most of their adult life to getting this industry up and going. And those are the people that we need to support, because they're also feeling all the things that the MCMA companies are doing to the caregivers is going on in coordination with like a market strategy to fuck with the caregivers that have transitioned into this market. Like, they're trying to drive us out of the market by picking up market space and ratcheting down the price. And they're using like their tactics to fuck with us. And one of the big things that we've talked about a lot is hitting it with the willow and remediating it. So one thing that the consumer can do to kind of fight back against that is you can learn about remediation, and you can learn the kinds of questions and things that you should be asking your bud tenders and the people that provide you licensed medical cannabis about. You know, you can go to neverremediated.com if you want, and you can learn about the remediation process and the Dirty Willow machine. And this is definitely going to be in coordination. We're going to do a very lengthy Willow, maybe even like a special episode. We're gonna Willow some material and see what happens, like what kind of terp loss we have and or other cannabinoid loss, and see what we're working with. But it's on the consumer ultimately. Like, you guys can support the good actors and you can put pressure on the stores. They're never gonna do this shit without people asking them, because like if you're High Life Farms or Wana, like for many stores, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if a lot of people are buying it, they're going to continue to stock it. So you have to give them alternatives, and you have to be informed and knowledgeable for them to take you serious. So it's on all of us. And that's, I guess, my plug for the show. Kyle, if you want to bring her on down.
No, I think you absolutely nailed it there. You know, we have some good actors and some bad actors in the Michigan industry. And I think the industry as a whole is in a good spot, but we're at a pivotal point where, you know, the overlords could drive it down into the shitter, or we can stand up and fight and continue to progress in the right way. So thank you so much, Jamie, for joining us today. And we'll definitely be in touch soon for sure. We'll definitely promote the shit out of the May 19th event at the Capitol, the lobby day. If you get some literature or anything put together for that, let us know, and we'll all blast it on social media.
Brandy Zink's doing a lot of the organization. Robin Schneider from MICAA, which industry excellent. Association is very helpful in a lot of things. So we'll see some info coming out, but I'll help to facilitate
excellent.
For you guys to be able to help get word out for sure. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you so much, man. And this has been Chat Watch. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Everybody.